You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
A year ago tomorrow, it was Valentine's Day, February 14th of 2011, when many people in Wisconsin responded to a bill that sought to end collective bargaining for state employees. Their response was to protest. Thousands of people throughout the state saw this bill as a violation of their basic rights. Here's Wisconsin Teamster Representative Danny McGowan on February 14th of last year.
Make no mistake about it. War has been declared on the unions in Wisconsin, and the House of Labor will stick together in protecting our members' rights.
And they did stick together, not just the House of Labor either, for weeks. Senate Democrats went into hiding, you'll remember, in order to escape the vote. And at its peak, 100,000 people congregated at the state capitol in opposition to Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and the Wisconsin budget repair bill. Protesters there chanting shame after they pushed through that bill. It did pass the state legislature. But did it spark a movement that continues today? That's what John Nichols argues, Madison journalist, author of the new book Uprising, How Wisconsin Renewed the Politics of Protest from Madison to Wall Street. Welcome to the program, John.
It's great to be with you.
You know, I want to begin by asking you if it has sparked a movement, if the movement continues today. I mean, as I said, that bill passed the state legislature. We've seen Occupy Wall Street encampments, part of the protest, right? Been taken down all over the country. We don't have too many headlines about Wisconsin protests or Occupy protests anymore. Did this movement die before it got going?
No, it's unquestionably much stronger today than it was a year ago. Remember, a year ago tomorrow, about 1,000 people marched on the Capitol in Madison. By the end of that week, that number had grown to 80 to 100,000, literally occupying the building itself with 7,000 to 8,000 people in the Capitol for the better part of 2 weeks. And much of that was undernoted. There was many people said, wow, something big's happening in Wisconsin, and they went away. Fascinating thing is the budget bill was passed and then signed by the governor. Yeah. And 2 days later, the largest demonstration of all occurred. And that's really a metaphor for what's going on. In Wisconsin, more than 1 million people have signed petitions to recall and remove Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, who did this initiative from office. There will be a recall election this year. That's the largest portion of a state's electorate ever to petition for the removal of their governor. And in states across the country, we've seen this play out. In Ohio, when they had a similar fight, they put their collective bargaining bill on the ballot through a petition drive. And the voters of Ohio voted 61% to 39% in favor of collective bargaining rights. So there's something churning across this country. Much of our media, frankly, has a hard time putting it together because it doesn't always occur, you know, in Zuccotti Park. Sometimes it occurs in a state capital that a lot of reporters don't get to very often.
Or they certainly don't have bureaus in every state
Absolutely.
Capital around the country.
But it's out there.
What's interesting as you read your book is how much the protesters in Wisconsin connected themselves to Cairo. And many people in the media said, hey, listen, don't try and compare this to the Arab Spring. That's an unfair comparison. But they themselves were saying that they were inspired by Tahrir Square.
Can I tell you, this is the Wisconsin protests played out literally in the shadow of Cairo and Tahrir Square. Governor Walker announced his initiative the morning after Hosni Mubarak stepped down. Wisconsinites, like people all over the world, had watched those courageous protests where people had gone to the square day after day. And I went to one of the first major protests. It was a year ago tomorrow in the evening. There was a remarkable crowd, probably 7,000, 8,000 people. And there was a guy with a sign in Arabic. And I walked up to him. I said, I'd covered wars in the Middle East and know a little bit of Arabic. And I said, Assalamu alaikum. He said, I don't speak Arabic. And I said, well, you can imagine my confusion, the sign. He says, oh, that. I went online this afternoon and I figured out how to write in Arabic. If Egypt could get rid of Mubarak, we can get rid of Scott Walker.
So that's great.
People saw it from the first minute, and they also saw something else that broke from an American protest tradition. In America, the tradition of protest in recent years has been call a rally, bus everybody in, have your 2 hours of speeches, go home. Cairo taught, no, go again the next day and the next day and the next day. And that is what you saw in Wisconsin.
We're speaking with John Nichols, a journalist and author of the new book called Uprising, How Wisconsin Renewed the Politics of Protest from Madison to Wall Street. I wonder, why Wisconsin? You know, out of there, this argument, as you say, is playing out in many places all over the nation. Why was it Wisconsin that, number one, attracted 100,000 people to the state capitol? It was freezing cold at the time this was happening.
Yeah.
And why Wisconsin?
Well, first off, the freezing cold was a good thing. Wisconsinites fish through ice. They drill holes in ice and fish in the middle of winter.
It's not just a rumor. Yeah.
Going out in the cold is not a – in fact, it's sort of a thing of honor. But there was something else. Governor Scott Walker was one of a wave of Republican governors elected in 2010. And Governor Walker, a Reagan acolyte, a guy who just spoke at the Conservative Political Action Conference on Friday, hailing the Reagan tradition. He really saw himself as this big change agent. So he moved faster on an austerity agenda than many other governors, one that has since come up in a lot of places. And he moved very big. I think he shocked the sensibilities of this smaller Midwestern state. And there's something else. Wisconsin has a rich progressive tradition. And it has a rich labor tradition, much unnoted outside. It is in Wisconsin that AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, was founded in 1932. Wisconsin was the first state to have full collective bargaining rights for all public employees. And so
there's Madison itself.
And Madison is a town that knows how to protest.
Yes.
And all these things were in play. I do think the Egypt overlay is not to be underestimated. And then the final element that I think is an intangible is that when the governor did this, many things could have gone the wrong way. Many things could have gone and the protests could have dissipated. But the governor tried to divide the House of Labor. This bill assaulted the collective bargaining rights of public employees and teachers, but not of police and firefighters. If the police and firefighters had stayed back and not joined the struggle, I have a sense that it's possible, not certain, that it might have dissipated. Instead, a day or so in, there was a mass rally at the Capitol. There were about 40, 50,000 people, and you heard bagpipes in the distance. And all of the off-duty firefighters in Madison, who had completely protected, they didn't have to be there, came marching in uniform behind bagpipes, marched through the crowd to the stage and say, "We stand in solidarity with labor." It was what really happened was a remarkable solidarity moment that I think was very powerful.
I want to play for you a band that you talk about in your book. This is the Street Dogs. Now, I mean, you describe sort of a culture rising up around protesting that's all of a sudden, for the people of Wisconsin at least, protest is part of their daily. You're nodding your head that this has become part of the psyche in Wisconsin.
There's a group called the Solidarity Singers that has sung in the rotunda of the Capitol labor songs, sometimes hundreds, even thousands of people, every day since this began. So these are teachers, these are doctors, small business owners who take their lunch break and sing labor songs. And at times, the whole Capitol rings with the sound of labor songs. They rewrote all the labor songs for Christmas. But also, there are so many songs that have come out of the Wisconsin struggle. This group's a Boston group that came out and played. Tom Morello, the lead guitarist for Rage Against the Machine, came to Madison and went away, wrote a song called Union Town that is just ripping great. There's a lot of rock and roll that's come out of this.
Where does this go, John? I mean, if you say that the movement is actually getting stronger, mm-hmm. I mean, in the end, it has to result in legislative change, right? Or
Look, we have a very broken political system in this country right now. It's no secret to your listeners that money is, you know, kind of infesting our system at every way, and it's very easy to think that corporate power and money power will define all of our politics from here on out. The only alternative is something, and I'm going to quote a guy that Newt Gingrich doesn't like, Saul Alinsky, who said the way they respond to organized money is with organized people. I think what you're seeing across this country is a response to a electoral politics that is so defined by money that it really doesn't seem very flexible. And the playout is that you are seeing mass movements in the streets, whether it's in Madison or the Occupy movements across the country, state-based movements. There have been more demonstrations, more people in capitals and outside capitals in the last year than in a generation. I don't think that's going to go away. And I do think it's generating a new politics. There's a woman running for the state legislature in Wisconsin named Melissa Sargent. She was out at every day of protest. She has four kids. She brought all of her kids. Now she's running for the legislature as a product of this movement and proposing to go to that legislature as somebody not brought in by the money but brought in by the street. I don't know how far that's going to go or where it'll end up, but what I can tell you is this is not only a politics of protest in the street. It is a new sort of politics that actually brings this people power into the legislative chamber. And in some places, I do think it'll change our direction of government.
John Nichols, the book is called Uprising, How Wisconsin Renewed the Politics of Protest from Madison to Wisconsin. Thanks.
Thanks. It's a delight to be with you.
Yeah, and from Madison to Wall Street, we want to hear where you think the new politics will be manifested in 2012. Give us a story at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment to thetakeaway.org. Catch up on that conversation or anything else on our show at 877-8-MY-TAKE or just go to our website, thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.